to mention that the postdoc that was working with me here on the distance of flight and MSMS was Gareth Dobson.
Okay.
Well, I thought, well, I could start with Luke Nagel's data and see what it could fit to, but I was having a little trouble figuring out exactly what his columns meant for his raw data figures, so I found him and by email, and we decided to, as he was beginning to explain more and more his data, I thought this would be a nice collaboration, and so I asked him if he wanted to collaborate on this, and he said that he did, and so we started a Skype collaboration, and we're working with his data. And it's clearly not exponential, so what is it? And I had already come to the conclusion it probably wasn't exponential because there is a way to make an exponential curve that has a finite area underneath it, but it just didn't kind of make sense. Mm-hmm. It made some sort of sense, but in another way it didn't. I even put it in my textbook that it went up exponentially, that every time it went down an order of magnitude, a detection limit, the number of things to detect went up an order of magnitude, and I believe that. Sid Sigia told me that 30 years ago. This is one of those facts, right? But I began to doubt it more and more, and I started to try to figure out what it could fit to, and when I plotted it on a log-log plot, it looked like it was part of a parabola, and mm-hmm. it did start to fit quite well to a second order equation. Then I discovered that there's a whole literature about things in nature turning out to be log normal. Log normal is the ordinary Gaussian distribution curve where the x-axis is the log of the variable rather than the linear. It's called a long-tailed curve because if you plot it on a linear axis, it looks like this. and I thought that was really interesting. Then I started to try to fit it to a log normal curve using statistical distribution fitting programs. But there's a problem. The statistical fitting programs will work with missing data, which is of course all the things below the detection limit, but it needs to know how many data points it's missing. So I would have had to know how many compounds that we weren't seeing, which of course we don't. That's right. What we want to find out. On the other hand, this is a thing that I've discovered, which I think is really useful, but is going nowhere at the moment. And that is that I derived a set of equations that equated the sigma and central value of the log normal distribution with the three parameters in the parabolic equation when you plotted it log-log. Now, it turns out, did you know this, that if you plotted the normal Gaussian distribution on a log-log plot, you got a parabola?
I did not know that.
I didn't either, but it does. Exactly. Perfect. And so there's a correlation, you see, we can make between the part of the curve that we can get plotted on a parabolic equation, take those parameters off, fit them into the (clears throat) the log normal distribution, and we already have an estimate for the number of points that we're missing, which we can get from the parabolic, from analyzing the parabolic curve, and we can refine that. And we were able to fit his data down to 3/9 on the parabolic, on the log normal distribution. That's looking kind of good. And so then I found a paper in AnalChem that was metabolites that they had done on this group had done using two different instruments and getting different data and so on. I thought, well, there's a big rich data set, I could work with that. And I also knew that Al Marshall was doing all of these components in crude petroleum, and so I got a data set from him. And we fit them all. Now, these are data sets not with just 100 or so compounds in them, but thousands. And so all three of those data sets fit the log normal really, really nicely, and I published this paper. with Luke. So, not only that, based on the fraction of the components that were below the detection limit in Al Marshall's experiment, I was able to tell him what his background noise was. I said, you've got a background noise of 5%. He said, how'd you know that? So this explains that there is, you know, the noise is just undetected compounds that are distributed over the spectrum. And I think this may turn out to be one of the most important things I've ever done. Because nobody has, it's a whole new field. It doesn't even exist anymore. Theory of complex mixtures. I think it's real. I think that there's a huge amount to be gained from it. I'm looking now at, and I'm probably within a month or two of having a paper out on what is the dynamic range and what are the detection limits that are needed if you've got a 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 10 million component mixture.
Wow.
And you have 50 micrograms of sample, or 100 micrograms of sample, or 2 micrograms. I started to think this gets quantized because these are individual molecules. The statistical programs are perfectly happy to give you fractions of molecules, but life doesn't do that. So I'm now correlating the facts, the quantization facts of actual analysis, and the fact that you detect discrete events with the with what the statistics are telling me about what the component distribution is going to be. And it's starting to turn out that dynamic range is way more important than sensitivity. And that is totally unintuitive to me. It's unintuitive to me that the component, the least component, the component with the least concentration in a 50 microgram sample and a million components still has 10 to the fourth copies. I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed that you've got to be down to looking at one copy or one copy every 10 runs or something like that, but that's not how it is. Avogadro's number is huge. It's seriously huge. So even if you've got 10 million compounds and they're distributed amongst even a millionth of an Avogadro's number of molecules. So it's really, it is a really, really interesting intellectual activity for me now, and I can do it without a group and without a lab. And I think it's going to be very important. And I did this, you say it's related to the distance of flight. If distance of flight got me in there, I said I'm going to have to prove that dynamic range is an important thing, or find out that it isn't. And so that's one of the other science thing besides working with Gary's group on the distance of light instrument. We got an NSF grant, Gary's group does, for doing soft landing with distance of light. One of the advantages of distance of light, besides the fact that you have an array of detectors, is that you now have isotopic separation or mass separation of your components. And with electrospray ionization, we can be talking about mass separating viruses. And they're intact, right? They can be collected using Graham Cooks's soft landing approach.
Well, unless there's more to say on that topic, Sarah and I were thinking that this might be a good time to pause for a minute and set up the video camera and talk about some of the other kind of big picture things that we wanted to talk about, in particular kind of the interest you've developed in history and philosophy of science.
Yes. Okay.
And do some of that on the video camera, if that's okay with you.
Where would you like to do it?